Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Hey, a lot of fights to talk about this weekend, including the history making of the Charlo twins, only the second set of twin brothers to hold championships. We're also going to talk a little bit about some of the earlier fights that took place on Friday night. Just waiting to get my co-host in, and I'm going to call our favorite gentleman every Sunday, Mr. Layman Brewster. So let's see if we can get Layman on the line. And I see my co-host has checked in, so let's check in with Jabron. Jabron, how are we doing this evening, my man?
Going great, JK. Everything is going great.
A lot of action this weekend, but before we go on, it's time for a little chilling with the champ, with our favorite.
Hello.
Gentlemen, Mr. Layman Brewster. Layman, how you doing today, my man?
How you doing?
Oh, hey, as always, man, we're doing great. You know what the weather's out like out here in Southern California, so I'm doing fine. My co-host is up there in Brooklyn. Jabron, how's everything going on up there in Brooklyn, my man?
The weather's pretty decent. It's, 60, 70 degrees, but it's buzzing in the city right now. We just had the Puffy and the Bad Boy reunion over the weekend because it was Big E's birthday, so Brooklyn was buzzing, the Barclays Center, but it's a lot of promotion for that upcoming fight with Sean Porter and Thurman. I've seen a lot of flyers and people with boxing T-shirts on, surprisingly.
Hey, well, now, Layman, you could possibly be in any corner of the world, so we're just going to ask you, man, how you doing, and are you at home or are you on the road tuning some of our up-and-coming young gentlemen?
I'm home, man. I just came back from Minnesota for the PBC shows that we just had out there this past Tuesday on the Fox Sports, man.
I'm kind of glad you mentioned that because a lot of that was lost in this weekend's action. Knowing about the twins and their striving for boxing history, but that Tuesday night fight card seemed to go pretty well, and Layman, how did you like Abel Sanchez's new project, Mr. Matamudov?
That guy's the new Triple G, man. I mean, he's the bigger version of Triple G. Should I say that, man? That dude, he's doing even Rooster power, man. It was scary to see him hitting them dudes, man. Like, that guy he knocked out, like, it really caught me by surprise because I knew he could punch, but I didn't know he could punch like that. But I had heard the word about this guy, man, but he's all that. I'm looking forward to seeing him actually move up to heavyweight because he's only 22 years old and he's a cruiserweight.
Now, I'm not sure, Jabron, if you remember, but we talked to Mr. Sanchez. And he kind of, in his real sort of quiet way, told us about this new fighter. Do you remember that, Jabron?
Yeah, he was saying that, you know, he at times that he was having trouble getting bodies in there to get him rounds for sparring because this guy can punch.
Understandably,
yeah.
Man. What do you got?
Go ahead,
Clayman. No, I was just saying that's understandably, man, when you got a guy that can punch like that, because I remember when I was getting ready for my world title fights, man, you know, people would tell me not to hold back, but I would always tell them why I would hold back. And then so I intentionally went against the wishes of people, and, you know, I would wait to the last 2 weeks, before the fight was about 2 to 3 weeks, and then I would open up, because these guys can't take that kind of power, man. They start coming up with all kind of excuses, no matter how much money you're paying them. You know, it ain't, you know, you put the fear of God in them, and then the thing is the problem is if you break it, if you knock a guy out with sparring, he'll never give you 100% again, because he'll always have that fear in his mind. So, you know, this guy, man, he's going to have that same trouble unless he take a page out of my book and just, you know, work on his weaknesses until, you know, we'll get close to the fight, and then he can pick it up. Because if he don't, man, he's going to fall into the same category as me. You know, you could have all the money, but ain't nobody stupid. They like it ain't worth it.
Now, you know, Layman, I mean, you know, we used to hear about that, you know, back in the day, back in your day. I mean, you know, that getting in the ring, sparring, you know, guys like you, you know, Lennox Lewis. I can go back further, Bone Crusher Smith, Larry Holmes. I mean, you know, sparring with guys back in your day was, I mean, it was actually a fight. I mean, you guys had your pride on the line. You wanted everybody to know that you were the heavyweight champ. But, Layman, you know, in this day, with all of the scientific analytics and everything that we put into boxing, is sparring still like that, or has sparring become more of a teaching tool rather than, you know, let's say a test of the other guy's masculinity?
I think it's still the same pretty much, man. You know, the caliber of fighter, of course, it's not what it used to be, man. But, you know, I go to these gyms and I see these guys, man, and, you know, they be out there trying to give it their all. But, see, I was taught something a little different, man. Slayton taught me not to go into the ring to hurt people, because I could hurt people, but to go in there to learn, or go in there to work on your weaknesses. And then unless you get somebody that can stand, you know, that can stand the heat in the kitchen, man, because the thing of it is that I used to, as a youngster, when I didn't know no better, well, I guess just coming up in the neighborhood that I came up in, it was all about me getting respect, and it was, you know, making these guys in the gym respect me. So I was punching hard. I was hurting a whole lot of people, and nobody would work with me until one day my trainer pulled me to the side. And he said, son, he said, you work on your weaknesses, man. You know, and then when you get somebody that can stand in there with you, then you pull the trigger. But, you know, you're hurting these guys, and you got these fights coming up, and nobody wants to box with you. So work on your weaknesses. And that's what I did, man, and it really helped me a lot. I mean, a whole lot. And then when it came time, when I was in the gym, when I was training over Wild Card, it was James Toney, it was Michael Moore, it was Frankie Lyles, Francois Botha. I mean, man, just every day, you know, or every other day, boxing with these cats for years, man. So, you know, then at that point, I didn't have to hold back anymore. But until then, I kind of had to.
Well, Layman, if you had to hold back then and you had trouble finding sparring partners, I imagine that list got really damn short after you set the record for the quickest knockout by a heavyweight fighter.
Yeah, man, you know, and the funny thing is there was a guy that was from Poland, some heavyweight, and he came over, I guess, from Poland. He was in Vegas, and he was looking for some sparring, and you know, they used to pay guys to try to knock me out, you know, just to try to keep me motivated. And so this guy, he came in and was looking for some sparring, and I was like, well, okay, this is perfect because, you know, I'm getting ready to fight actually a guy from Poland. And the funny part about that, man, this guy, he came in on the tail end, and he tried to take me out. Now, when I say came in on the tail end, now, I done sparred with 3 or 4 different guys, right? And I done been like 3 or 4 minute rounds with like a 30-second rest with these dudes, man. And so I was tired. So the dude comes in, and he's like guns blazing trying to take me out, you know. So I'm like, oh, wow, okay, you know. So that, you know, the sparring session was over with and whatnot. So the next day he comes into the gym, and now mind you, this whole time I've been taking it easy. I still took it easy on that first day because I wanted to let him see that I wasn't one of them dudes that was in there just try to bang. So the next day he come in, and everybody started warming up. I said, nope. I said, he going first. And so he came in there, and I guess he thought he was going to try to get off on me again. Man, I just top and bottom, and I hit him with that body shot. I ain't seen him since, man. I really haven't. And this was back in like 2005, but supposedly he went back to Poland and told everybody that he beat me up. I was like, okay, well, I got to tell her to take, but I don't want to embarrass him. But anyway, yeah, man.
Hey, man, you know, now, you know, and taking things a step further, man, it had to be somewhat heartwarming to see the success by the first fight promoted by your good friends James Toney and Roy Jones Jr. Are we going to see many more of these collaborations? And, Layman, I mean, you know, to your knowledge, how did this particular partnership come about?
Well, you know, James, you know, life after boxing for him, and, you know, Roy Jones, like, after boxing, I think that they are trying to be smarter, and smart is, listen, we both got a big name, we both got a promotional company, and, you know, if we work together, the fans that will come out, because when can you ever say that you saw both James Toney and Roy Jones in the same place? So, you know, I think that it's something that is exciting. I think it's something that the people want to see. And, you know, their show was successful, man.
Now, Layman, you know, I mean, it seems to me, I mean, you know, is this kind of maybe the dawn of a new age in boxing? I mean, we're seeing more and more of, you know, your peers starting to put production companies together. And, I mean, these are starting to look somewhat successful, unlike, you know, the stabs that Mike Tyson and some of the guys earlier started. We have Mayweather now. We have, you know, like I said, the copulation that you just said between Roy Jones and James Toney. We are also seeing a lot of things coming out of the D.C. gym. Lynn, is this the beginning of something new? A lot of you guys are starting to put your assets together and seeing that you can actually make a difference in the promotion of these fighters?
Yeah, man, and I hope so, man, you know, because I believe in evolution in all things, and I believe that boxing is one of the things that is still in the caveman days, and I think that taking it to the next level, the evolution, really, which is a revolution, would be to fighters to start promoting fights. You know, you had Oscar De La Hoyas and people like that, but, you know, I mean, you know, Oscar, he looks out more for his race, and I understand that, but, you know, I think to see people like James Toney and, you know, I don't know what happened with Mike Tyson. I don't really think Mike Tyson too much ran his own thing. I think he had somebody doing it, which is why it failed, because in order for something to truly succeed, you got to have your heart into it. You know, people can pick up on that. And So, you know, I think that we're going to see all new promoters in the next 10 years, so to speak, man. You know, these boxers saying, look, I had a career. I know this game. Who knows it better than a fighter? Who knows when fighters should get paid, you know what I mean, more than a fighter? And so I'm actually excited about it, man.
Jabron, we haven't heard from you in a while. Anything, any observations or anything you would like to talk to Layman about?
For any more updates on the heavyweight champion, Dante Wilder?
Oh, well, you know, man, it's funny you say that, dude, because I just said that I was going to be checking into that this week to find out, you know, what whatever came about, because I don't know whatever happened. Like, I heard that Povetkin had tested positive, but then I saw something that said he was fighting. I'm like, hold on. So I'm still trying to get, you know, get a clear understanding on what's going on, because I really don't know. Have either of you guys heard anything about the fight? I mean, besides Povetkin being tested positive?
Only thing I heard that Dante said that he would entertain still fighting the guy because he still want to kick his butt for wasting all his time.
Well, I could see that, but I just hope, you know, I hope that he's smart to say I'm not going to fight in his backyard now. I mean, I understood, but that was a purse bid, and the guy that won the purse bid wanted to fight in Russia, and I understand that. But I just hope that we can do it over here in America, because at least that way we know that there won't be no foul play against Deontay. That's where I'm getting at.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that, Layman. You know, now that you've tested dirty, you know, I think, you know, I can call the shots on where this fight is held. You know, but yet and still, you know, if it goes back to purse bid, hey, who knows what could happen. But the last I heard, you know, the fight was off. Povetkin still wanted to fight, and as far as I know, Deontay still wanted to fight. But once again, it's, you know, the politics of boxing, along with, of course, and which I can understand, and I'm sure you do too, Layman. You know, the safety factor involved for Deontay. Not saying, you know, that you know this guy is going to hit Deontay necessarily, but, you know, if we know that he's on an illegal substance and he's already tested positive for it, I mean, I do think that there's a certain amount of scrutiny that we have to put on this and make sure that Deontay's on an even platform.
Exactly. I agree with that 1,000%, because I know that, and I, you know, I'm just calling it like it is. I know that these people will do anything to win, and they've just shown that. They've proven that just for the simple fact that this man tested dirty. You know, they're willing to do whatever it takes for this guy to win, and, you know, the referee is going to be against him, the crowd going to be against him, and, you know, even the things where Deontay would eat in the restaurants, man, those chefs, hey, man, you know, they patriots, and don't think for one second that they won't do it, because I got 1,000 testimonies to back that up, man, where fighters from America has went overseas, and even the kitchens have given them food that's made them sick, you know, so it ain't just the referees, it ain't just, you know, the promoters, you know, so, you know, I hope that Deontay's smart, and I hope that he, you know, can bring this title back home to defend it versus going overseas.
Yeah, it's becoming quite controversial, but as you said, Layman, I mean, you already knew the risk, but hey, we do have Iceman Iceman John Scully. He is in the queue. And Iceman, how are you doing this Sunday, my man?
Yes, sir. Sorry I'm late. I misplaced my phone, but I found it on the front porch, so I'm ready to go.
No problem. Now, Layman was talking about him being in Minnesota for the PBC series Tuesday, but you're coming back from all the way across the border, I believe. You want to tell us a little bit about your journey into Canada and the young man that you helped train?
Right. Well, I was up there working with Arthur Bedabayev. Vicious. Layman, when I texted you the other day, that was the kid I was talking about. He's fighting June 4th. I don't know if you're going, but it's in Montreal, June 4th, the PBC show, because Al Heyman manages him. And this kid is something, man. His I'll tell you a funny thing. I won't mention the guy's name, but he had a good sparring partner, a kid with a lot of experience in camp with him, a guy who I knew well from another camp. And it's funny, like, the guy had no shame. He's like, listen. He said, you know, I know I'm a good fighter. I know I can fight. He said, but I can't wait to go home. He said, I can't be going to the gym every day sparring with this monster. Like, this guy's just a beast. This kid's getting paid good, like, really good. And he's like, it got to be almost like comical, because every day he sees me and he just shake his head. And he's like, man, I can't wait to go home. So, you know, and this Arthur, man, he, like I say, when Arthur was 6-0, they put him in with Tavoris Cloud, like, last year. And everybody, you know, they're like, man, 6-0, this is crazy. And he devastated Tavoris Cloud. Like, no guy in the world, 6-0, is going to fight Tavoris Cloud. And that's exactly what happened. You know, and this guy, he, you know, he had 300 amateur fights. He was a world amateur champion. Just a big puncher. His mentality, I think, and I think I even mentioned this, we talked about this before, about him, I think, the mentality, you know, he's Russian, he's Chechenian, and, you know, they grow up there, you know, it's different than anything in America, you know, as far as their survival and their need to get out of there and to rise up, and that's just what he brings with him, you know, just talking to him, he's like, you know, with his accent. He's like, why wait? I can do it now. Like, I've got to do it now. I've got to feed my family. I got to take care of my family, you know, and that's his whole thing. You know, he doesn't want to have 20 fights and do this and that. Like, if he feels he can beat the guy Kovalev, like, he's ready to fight Kovalev now. He beat Kovalev twice in the amateurs. And,
wow.
Yeah, if you remember Ishmael Shalak, who was a good light heavyweight, they used to call him the Black Russian. Yeah, well, he knocked him out in the amateurs as well.
Wow.
So, yeah, no, this kid, man, you're going to hear about him. Like I say, he's 9-0. He's already knocked out two former world champions. He knocked out Tavoris Cloud and Gabriel Campillo. So, you know, like, he's probably the best 9-0 I've ever seen. And he's going to fight he's actually fighting a kid from Argentina on June 4th. Who among other things, went 10 rounds with Edwin Rodriguez on television. You know, normally it would be a step up, but, you know, I think it's actually a step up for the other guy, believe it or not. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not one to get too high on people and jump the gun, and that's how, you know, I know anything can happen in boxing, but, you know, he seems to me like a special individual.
Now, Layman, I want to ask you this. Well, actually, I want to ask you and Scully this. I want both of you to address it, but I want you to start out with you, Layman. Once again, you know, the guys that we've talked about, Mr. Magnamudov, that was on Tuesday. I believe he's a light heavyweight fighter. Trained by Abel Sanchez. John, you're talking about another Eastern Bloc country guy that's coming out of the north. We've already spoke of Kovalev. We've already spoke of Triple G. So, Layman, my question is, you know, back in your day, we used to go to the, you know, the different boys clubs and the different amateur programs here in America to find the type of guys that had this type of motivation. Layman, are we seeing the rise of let's put it like this. Do you think that Americans are becoming too soft, and the Eastern Bloc countries that are now going through all these crises and looking for a way out are taking advantage of it and coming over here and profiting by the knowledge that we're imparting from our American trainers?
I think that it's just my opinion. I think it's just lack of trainers, which is why we are where we are today, along with these guys. The European fighters, they've taken their work ethic and then they've added it our way of fighting, and you're really starting to see really great fighters coming out from the East, man, from Europe. And I just equate it to the supplements that they take, their training regimens. They work very hard, and then if you was to add that on top of American style of fighting, man, that's really an unbeatable combination. And then, you know, you got trainers out there that have some old school training. You got the, you know, Abel Sanchez and those type of guys, Shadid Salukis and people like that, man. You know, getting with these European fighters with their training methods, and it's making an unbeatable force, man. And you know, really, I think that it's really going to help the sport, because that's going to make the American fighters step up. And I'm starting to see, like, a lot of the fighters that Al Haymon represents, man, I'm seeing some really good fighters, man, some young guys coming up, you know, to really give these East Russian or Eastern European, whatever you call them, these guys can fight. And I think that you're seeing these guys from the Midwest again, from the East Coast, you know, from down south. I really believe that, like, they're really coming, stepping up their game because they know they have to.
John, you know, Layman says it, you know, says his trainers, but, you know, when I look at you and I look at guys, you know, like John David Jackson, like Barry Hunter, you know, is it really, you know, is it the fact that we have maybe too many trainers and not enough teachers?
Right. Well, I'm going to tell you something. It's funny listening to Lema, what he just said, because he hit it right on the head. Like, the reason I was in Montreal was because they wanted to teach him some American-style stuff. That's the whole reason I was hired to go there. So what Layman said was 100% accurate. Like, and his work ethic. Layman also mentioned the work ethic. This guy, this guy, Arthur, is unbelievable. Like, the stuff he does. And I actually put a YouTube video up one day. He was in the gym doing this exercise, and he has these things that he made himself. And he stands up upside down on them. He puts his hands on them, and he pushes himself up in the air, and he holds himself there, which is like it would be impossible. If I ever tried to do it, it would be literally impossible. I could not do it. And this guy does it, and he holds himself there in midair, and then he walks around the ring on these things. And, you know, his work ethic is just incredible. And, you know, he's trying to learn different facets of the game, you know, that they don't necessarily teach in Russia. You know, they have more of a stand-up European style, and he's trying to learn these different things. And and you mix all that together, and it's just incredible, you know, what you see with Lomachenko and Triple G. I mean, it's just, when I think of it, I think, man, I wish it started earlier. Imagine back, you know, I knew when I was amateur back in the 80s, there were so many guys, Russians, that were phenomenal, just knockout punchers, and they never turned pro. They never got a chance to go pro. And I'm like, man, I wish these guys would have been around, middleweights, you know, and to come around and match up with Hearns and Hagler and those guys. But we never got to see them. So it's definitely a new era, and it's a good thing, you know, guys.
Okay. Ron, anything you want to add to that or ask, pick the two brains of our experts?
Great for boxing. What's that?
Yeah, you touched on the topic about the amateur fighting and saw the circle the wagon, JK, but I just saw a HBO special on the headgear situation.
Yeah.
And
The
thing,
Jim
Lampley
is fight game.
Yeah. And the thing that surprised me was that about the head injuries. They was trying to say that with the headgear that they were sustaining more head injuries and concussions because accumulation of punches. I just would want your input on what you think about that.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, the only thing I was going to say was, and Lehman knows this as well as I do, you go through, you know, like in the Nationals, you have to go through your local tournament, say, in January, and then in February you go to the Regionals, and then March or April they have the U.S. Championships. So that could be, the U.S. Championships is generally four or five fights. So that to get there and win it, you'd have to go through, in a span of 3 months, you'd have to go through probably 10 fights. Now, doing that without headgear might be impossible to go through and not get cut, bruised, banged up, get your nose messed up, different things. The headgear is for that. So many times we bang heads in the amateurs, but we never even notice it. I've never gotten a headbutt cut ever in my life from an amateur fight. So that's what it's really, for, because to go through these grueling tournaments day after day and having tough fights, it's going to be hard to get these guys to last. So I think that's the main reason why we need the headgear.
Yeah, and before you, Layman or JK, responded on that, to piggyback on that, about getting more people involved, either the training or different things of that sort, was to lead into, do you think, is that going to scare away the American kids to get involved in boxing without the headgear at such a young age?
I believe it will. I mean, because I'm speaking as a parent. I'm speaking as a parent and as a fighter. Because you hear about stories of guys who, for lack of a better word, punch drunk. And so you figure these guys are punch drunk, but they had amateur careers and wore headgear. Now they're not even wearing headgear. So you got to be asking yourself, like, wow, man, does that mean that I could be punch drunk even quicker if I become punch drunk? And then as a parent, I'm like, heck no, I'm not finna let my son get into boxing and mess around and get a cut, get his eye put out, detached retina. I mean, just anything like that. Like I wouldn't let my son fight because they don't require the headgear as they should. And that's just my two cents on it.
Right. I agree 100%. I think they're going to ruin the sport because, there's a lot of guys. Everybody assumes that all the amateurs want to go pro, and that's not always the case. There's a lot of good amateurs that never went pro, and they just don't want to go pro. They're married, they have kids, they have good jobs, and they can also fight. But they can't be going to work at their job with, busted noses and cuts and that type of thing. And they just like it as a sport, and they treat it as such. And to get these guys, now they have cuts and bruises and concussions, it's going to turn a lot of these guys off to it. So, it's a movement they're trying to do. They're trying to gear everything towards the pros, and, they had that World Series of Boxing they were doing. And, it's very obvious what they're trying to do eventually. And they're ruining the Olympic spirit. Now they're even talking about having pros in the Olympics, which is you know, just aren't insane to me. Like you know, they're talking about Mayweather. They're saying Mayweather may now get a chance to get the gold medal that he never got. And that's just ridiculous. The whole spirit of the Olympics was, for boxing, was young kids driving their way, working through the game, trying to win the gold medal. And now, you know, if you got Floyd in there, what chance does anybody have? So it's I don't like the way boxing has been turned over these last couple of years. That's for sure, amateur boxing.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead.
No, I just said I agree. Wholeheartedly, I agree. I mean, because they were talking about a couple of years ago, talking about Vladimir Klitschko fighting. I'm like, man, first of all, why would you not allow some young kid to be able to dream? He's already going to be intimidated if he got to go into the ring against a Vladimir Klitschko. So why would you do that? Like, I really wish that I could speak to the people in the amateur, you know, department and find out, like, who are you? Why are you? Why would you not want to protect these kids? And, I mean, I just, like I wish that, man, maybe I need to start this movement. Maybe we need to start this movement where we get all the pros to come together to go against this ignorance, man, because it's truly madness to think that you're going to put pros in the amateurs and let alone no headgear. Like, it's just stupid. I don't get it. I just don't.
Well,
yeah,
no,
I agree.
But let's talk a little bit about how this happened also, because when you refer to the Olympic Games originally were, as everyone is, as I'm sure will agree, was in the spirit of amateur sports. Then we started incorporating professional basketball players, professional hockey players, da-da-da-da-da. But when it comes to boxing, And I'm going to direct this at both you guys, and I know it sounds harsh, but isn't a lot of this our fault? Because we used to have a prominent face in international sports such as boxing. We used to have guys like Emmanuel Stewart, Freddie Roach, Dundee. All of these guys used to be involved in the rules and the integrity of the sport. But we've gotten so concerned with the dollars and cents that we've kind of just nodded our head for all of these years, and now we find ourselves in this position where we as Americans, and supposedly at one time the most superior nation in the world in this game, we have now let other countries control the fate of our boxers. Isn't this some of this our fault by our lack of attention to what has been going on in the last two decades?
Well,
what you think?
Well, I know this. AIBA is in charge. Like, they're the, and I believe the lead, the president of AIBA, if I'm not mistaken, he's from China. So really, like, we're just another member. You know, we're like one of the United States, and we're listening to what the White House says. And we're not the White House, you know. That they're based, I believe, you could look it up, but I believe it's in China. I believe that's where the head guy is, and it's them. They're the ones that control all of this. So we really have no say when that amateur headgear rule affects worldwide. You know, that's not just for us. So you know, the Americans really have no say in the matter. You know, just to be fair.
But that's exactly what I'm saying. Before, by our dominance in the game and in the sport, we used to have a say. Why don't we have
it
anymore?
Well, no, not really. No, that's a myth. Like AIBA's in charge. They've always been in charge. Always. Like, the USA doesn't set any rules. We're not in charge. We have no say in the international rules. IEBA, that's them. We have nothing to do with that. I can assure you that. The United States have nothing to do with that.
But don't we have a vote?
Right, but there's power, you know, I don't know how many countries in the world. Everybody, like, our vote counts nothing more than Amsterdam. Like, their vote counts just as much as ours do. And really, like, no, like I don't, in some instances, and they, IEBA makes the rules. They don't necessarily take votes. They just do what they want to do, and if you're with it, you're with it. But they, you know, you can look, like, it's AIBA, IEBA. And you can look them up on the internet. Yeah, you know who they are. And so, you know, they're in control. You know, they're the ones. If you look up this World Series of Boxing with amateurs fighting with no headgear a couple of years ago, Rashid Warren fought a bunch of times in it. That was IEBA's. That wasn't American Boxing Federation doing it. That was IEBA's choice, and some of the American boxers were in it. So IEBA's been manipulating it, and to be honest with you, as far back as when I was amateur before Lehman was in the 80s, I heard about this movement back then. I heard that this was going, and you know, it took a long time, but here it is. And I heard about this well over 20 years ago, that this kind of thing was going to eventually start.
So wow. Your thoughts, Lane? I just don't understand. When did it become more of a concern for the fans than it did for the safety of the fighters? And I think that you're going to see in the future a decline of fighters, because you got so much already going on in the world, so many fears. Now, as a parent, the last thing you're going to do is let your son go out there and get hit without a headgear, because at least the headgear, even though it, you know, we all know the truth of the headgear, but even that being said, it makes you feel a little secure as a parent.
Right.
And the fact that it's just not, I mean, that they're taking this away, I think it hurts the sport. I really do.
John, I kind of want you to expand on this, because you actually teach amateurs, and you still, you know, I mean, your amateur background, you're still involved with everything amateurs as well as pros.
Right.
But John, you know, we've seen, you know, the movie Concussion, everything that, you know, I mean, when you look at least once a month, the National Football League has something coming out about concussions. We have parents now concerned about their sons playing peewee football and some not letting their kids play football until they become a certain age. Layman has already spoken of it as a parent. And, John, I mean, is this a concern in boxing now without the headgear, that, you know, are you concerned that our amateur numbers may decline significantly because of this no headgear rule?
Oh, without a doubt. Because Lehman and I, like, we're, with all of our experience, we're saying it. Imagine a parent with no experience and just going, wait a minute, but my son's not going to box without headgear. Like, I'm not letting them box. Like a parent, they're not looking at anything but their son's safety. And part of the lure of amateur boxing, we could always – that's one thing I've told parents a million times as a coach. I'm like, oh, because the mother comes in, she's all stressed out. And I'm like, oh, no, don't worry. Listen, we're a safe sport. We've got the headgear. Don't worry about it. And, you know, if anybody gets even buzzed a little bit, they'll give them an 8 count. So that soothes them. But if I'm telling this parent, like, little Bobby's going to have no headgear, it's not going to go over too good. And you know, I don't know. I assume it's only for open class. I assume that. And I've got to believe that in good conscience that that's what they're going to do. Because I'll give an example, and Lehman knows these type of guys, but Bones Adams, I knew Bones, you know, former WBA champion, super bantamweight. Bones I knew Bones when he was 13. When I was 19, he was 13. When I was 19, I had 57 fights. He was 13. He had 113 fights already. Now, imagine no headgear. 113 fights, you're 13 years old, and you've already fought 113 times. You know, some of these kids, they come up lots of fights. Kelsey Banks, over 600 amateur fights. So the no headgear is just insane. It's insanity, and it's like I say, it's a movement towards the pros. They've already shown what they're trying to do with the World Series of Boxing. It's obvious what they're trying to do, and American boxing will you know, suffer, because in a lot of countries they're like, you know, you go to Colombia, you go to places like that, they're like, okay, no headgear, that's fine, and they, you know, we want to get out of here, we want to make some money. In America, they're like, listen, we'll play football, we'll play hockey, we'll play baseball, we'll do whatever. You know, it's a different mindset. So, and that's the thing, these rules, you know, you have to realize the world, every country, every region of the world is different. It's a completely different mentality. And the Americans, you know, middle American moms aren't going with the no headgear rule. I can pretty much guarantee that.
I just want to find out who came up with it. Like, I want to know who was sitting around and said, you know what, let's take the headgear off the kids. I really want to know who exactly. I want to know what his name is. I want to know what his background is. Has he ever been a boxer? Has he ever been punched in the face? I really want to know.
Right. Well, I think is a domino effect, because now you're saying take the headgear away, and now we just discussed about the lack of teachers. We just have a lot of trainers. There's no more teachers. So now you throwing a guy in here with inexperience, and, oh, he's 11 and, oh, we're going to throw him in a title fight. So now you got less experience with no headgear. So if he get to make it to that level of a title bout, like the champ said, he's going to be punched drunk by then.
Right.
Well, you know, you got a guy like John Scully who's a master trainer, and then you may have somebody from Backwoods, Indiana, going up against John Scully's fighter. And you know, even if that guy has a good record, say his record is 15-0, you know, as an amateur fighter, but he's only fighting people around his neck of the woods. But then you got a guy like Scully who's training these guys, who's bringing all this international and all this old school, and then they're getting sparring left and right from all up and down the East Coast and down south. So let's say he's 15-0. Then who you think is going to win?
Right, it's a different 15-0, that's for sure.
Oh, most definitely, guys. Well, hey, in our last 10 minutes here, let's talk about the history that was made this weekend. We saw the Charlo twins both come out of the ring victorious. John, this was actually Jamel's second fight, I believe, maybe his third fight. No, I believe it was his second, without Ronnie Shields in his corner. He's now on his own, opened up his own gym in Dallas. But the brothers seem close as ever. But, John, is there anything that you noticed about maybe possibly a change in style of Jamel in this victory and this history-making championship?
Well, to be honest with you, I actually ran an amateur show last night at my gym in Hartford. So we had 16 bouts, so I was at the fights all night. I didn't get out of there till after midnight, so I didn't see the fight. But realistically, I didn't see the fight, but I'm just saying in general, when a guy leaves a trainer for a new guy, you know, I don't think in his first couple fights you're going to see a huge difference. Maybe, you know, the differences you're going to see are probably going to be more subtle than anything, just little things, because I don't believe a trainer does or should get a new fighter and change things major. Like when I first started training Chad Dawson, for example, the second time, when after he had been champion the first time, you know, it wasn't like I tried to change things dramatically. Just little things that would make him better, but nothing, you know, because with his experience and his age, you know, you're not going to reinvent this guy. So, you know, I think whoever's training Charlo now, they're probably just fixing and just suggesting little things that maybe the casual observer probably didn't even notice.
Yeah, like you said, the casual fan probably didn't notice, but Layman, the thing that I noticed was that, I mean, you know, after the first fight, in which Jermell, you know, was his usual box himself, throwing out the jab and moving in behind it. This particular fight, it seemed like he wanted to prove himself to be the puncher. Now, whether or not it was his decision, the trainer's decision, or, you know, it was just, you know, everybody is used to Jermall having the, you know, being the hard puncher of the family. Was this a subtle difference that you noticed that Jermell maybe wanted to try out his punching power a little more than usual than he was with Ronnie?
You know, man, I'll admit that's a fight that I didn't get to see, and I was reading about it because I was tied up with the wife because, as you know, I had just came back from my trip in Minnesota, but I heard there were some great fights, man, and I was really surprised. Because what's the guy that lost to one of the brothers?
Julian Jackson. John Jackson. John
the
Jackson.
One from New Mexico. Not John Jackson. The other one.
Oh. Who you? You mean the one that Jamel fought?
Austin Trout.
I was really surprised to hear that he beat Trout because I said, wow, man, you know, because Trout, to me, I don't know where he's at in his fighting career because it's been a while, but, man, I thought Trout was the truth at one point.
Yeah, Austin fought a great fight. Austin, you know, is one of those guys that you know, we have a special place in our heart for because – he's also one of the gentlemen that first started out with us, you know, gave us some of our first interviews. And I'm not exactly sure, but I believe, you know, this was only the second time that he had been cut. You know, we all know the great job he did against Canelo, and he did a great job against Jermall. I believe, you know, the scores could have been a little bit closer. Whether or not Austin actually won the fight, I think is subjective. But I do think that the scoring was a little lopsided. Jabron, did you get the same thing, or were you all right with the scores?
No, I scored it a draw. Charlo came out kind of controlling the pace a little bit early in the fight, and then Trout started taking more chances and getting a little more aggressive. It seemed like Charlo kind of gassed a little bit towards the end of the fight, and Trout just stayed the course and was being a true professional and just kept fighting. And like I said, I think it was a draw.
Well, you know, I could easily see it being scored a draw also. Like I said, it was a very close fight. You know, I mean, you know, Austin, for the first time in I believe that I've ever heard, Austin, you know, he made a little dig, you know, but being the true professional and the gentleman that he was, you know, he gave everyone the props and acknowledged Jamal as the winner. But Devon, did you happen to see the moment between Julian Jackson Sr., well, Julian Jackson, and Jamel Charlo when he actually spoke to Mr. Jackson and kind of apologized to him for the way that fight ended?
No, no, I didn't catch that moment. I must have been in the kitchen grabbing something. I think I stepped away during that time.
Well, it was kind of subtle, but you know, you caught it. It was just before the altercation and when someone stepped in the ring and Jamal said, "Who are you walking up on me?" Do you remember that part?
Yeah, I remember that part. I caught that part.
Okay, well, it was just before that when he showed the father great respect. And I have to ask both of you guys before we close out, because I'm sure both of you are familiar with Mr. Julian Jackson. You know, Layman, we talked about, you know, boxers turning promoters, but were you surprised, you know, knowing Mr. Jackson's background to have his son in the game and to see him be at such a high level, even though we don't know that much about him over here in the United States because he's from the Virgin Islands. But his son is a very classy fighter, just like Mr. Jackson. But would you expect anything less from a great like Mr. Julian Jackson?
No, man. You know, just like Scully was saying something earlier to the effect that, you know, those guys come from a different mentality, being from overseas. Well, not that that's overseas. It's the Caribbean. But the point is that they have a different mentality, and they're not really concerned as much as we would probably be, because we have so much more offered to us. So our thought is we can do something else. For them, it's like, look, this is my ticket out. My father did it. I can do it. I want to do it. And then, you know, with a guy like Julian Jackson, you know, he's going to watch out for his son, and then that's going to give his son the confidence that he needs to fight anywhere in the world, period, you know. And, you know, again, just seeing these guys like Julian Jackson Sr., you know, getting into boxing on the other side, you know, the management, the promotional side, I think it does the sport wonders.
Yeah, John, you want to give us your thoughts on Mr. Julian Jackson and give us your final thoughts for the weekend and tell us a little bit more about the show that you hosted last night.
Well, the you know, with Julian, I mean, a guy like him on the island there, I mean, I would assume that he's an idol, and I would assume that the kids look up to him, and his son's success must spur on some kids. So I would assume that in 10, 15 years from now, you're going to hear about some kid who started boxing in 2016 because Julian's son fought on television. So that's a great thing. It's just another country, another nation that's going to produce some fighters. So that's a great thing. And, you know, as far as me, you know, I had an amateur show last night, great show, just trying to keep the kids busy. New England area, Connecticut, over the last few years has really picked up in terms of what we've had quite a few national champions, especially in the junior division. And we've had kids make the Olympic trials and all of that. So, you know, we're just trying to keep it going. I moved back here about 5 months ago and just trying to keep it going, just trying to keep the thing going. And in the future, like I say, Layman and I, we're going to get together and have a dual meet, team versus team.
Yes, sir.
hey, Scully, as always, my man, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time. And, hey, hopefully, you know, God willing, and your schedule, we'll see you back here next week, my man. You have a great weekend.
All right, fellas. Be good. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Scully.
Yes, sir, buddy.
Yeah, look, Layman, that list is getting longer and longer, man. I'm telling you, and you know, like, you know, we're gonna do this. We're going to Ohio. We're going to Connecticut. You know, and I don't know about John and his boys up there, but after we beat your butts in Ohio, I mean, you know, I got a few other stops for you to make. Hey, man, I gotta represent my state, man. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, man.
But
I understand.
Hey, champ. But all jokes aside, my man, you know, we appreciate the time you give us every Sunday. Love getting your views on the amateurs as well as the pros. So why don't you give us your final thoughts for the week? Tell us if we're going to be seeing you on the next PBS broadcast, exactly what's happening. Whatever you got going, my man, and tell them where they can find you on social media also.
Well, the thing is, I'll start with social media. You can catch me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. It's at Layman Brewster. It's LAMON BREWSTER. You can follow along. You can ask me questions. I love answering questions, whether it be on nutrition, whether it be on getting ready for a fight, the mindset, anything physical to do with boxing. You know, I love giving advice, man. So, you know, and overall, I love meeting people. I love just having that conversation because down the road, you know, it might, you know, you just never know. I might be in your town. I work for PBC. I am a representative of Al Heyman, and every time I come to a town, I'm always looking to meet fans, meet people. And I say, if you're in the area, reach me, get out, contact me, and maybe I can see about trying to get you some tickets to the show, man. You know, to these fights, and not only would you meet me, you'll also be meeting some of these up and coming champions, and some of these guys are going to be champions, man. And you know, I always say support this game because this game has saved a lot of people's lives, not just in the ring but out of the ring. And you know, that's my two cents, man. Just thank you for supporting me. Whether you know a fighter or like a fighter, as long as you support this sport, then somebody's winning at the end. Somebody is eating at night. Somebody is having the opportunity to better themselves. So that's what I'm gonna say.
All right, champ. Well, hey, we look forward to talking to you again next week, my man. Hope everything turns out fine with not only the amateur promotions, but also the great work that you're doing with the PBC series and Mr. Al Heyman and all the fighters involved. And, hey, man, as always, we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, always.
Last but not least, my co-host, Mr. Jabron Clement, talking to us from up there in New York. Jabron, tell us what's happening, my man. Any social media events, anything happening at Gleason Gym, anything you just might want to hook our listeners up with, and tell them where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, you can find me at Gleason's Gym. We will be relocating after all these years, just around the block to a new location, new facility in a couple of weeks. I'll give you an update on the opening, grand opening. They're going to have a special event there, so I'll keep you updated with that. And I'm on Facebook, Jabron Clement, JABRANCLEMON, and let the people know where they can find you, JK.
Well, I'm on King's Crib and WestCoastSteel.com. You can find me on either one. You can also find our particular broadcast on ThePugilistCorner.com. The Pugilist Corner page on Facebook. And Jabron, you can, you know, post anything that you like up there. You're listed as one of our administrators, so any stories or pictures or anything that you might like to post as far as the boxing world, feel free. We have a Facebook presence, and you can also find us online. So have a great night, everyone. Looking forward to having a great show Tuesday and on the Pugilist Corner. And Jabron, I will see you then. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.